Hello and welcome to Crossroads Debate. I'm Brent Craigston. In one short week, Egypt has written a new page in its history. Against great odds, Egyptians have mobilized against the regime of President for Life Hosni Mubarak. Mostly peaceful demonstrations sparked a wave of violence, and at least 100 people are dead. The epicenter of revolt is Tahrir, or Independence Square in Cairo, where the Egyptian opposition is gathered in defiance of a military curfew. Protesters are calling for an unlimited strike and a million-person march. On Sunday, the opposition united behind Mohamed El-Baradei, the Nobel Prize laureate, joined protesters in Tahrir Square and demanded that Mubarak, quote, save his country by stepping down. He also called on the U.S. to, quote, stop life support for the dictator. Egypt seems set to follow the example of Tunisia in what is being called an Arab People's Revolution. Joining me here in R5's Paris studios to talk about what's next for Egypt on this another fateful day are, on my right, Egyptian economist Adel Mahani, and on my left, Karim Bitar. He is with the Institute for International and Strategic Relations here in Paris. And also on the line from Cairo, journalist and filmmaker Philip Risk. Welcome, all three of you. Philip Risk, if I can ask you the first question, can you help us understand what is happening in Tahrir Square?
The mood is incredibly festive. I mean, it's a very, very rare scene these days on the streets of Cairo. The community is out on the street guarding their homes, even in the neighborhood around Tahrir Square. In Tahrir, there is a unified call for the end of Mubarak's regime. Absolutely everyone I talk to is calling for that and is completely rejecting the appointment of Security Chief Omar Suleiman as vice president. And there is, as of now, really no talk of who the alternative might be. There's no real call for a support for Mohamed El-Baradei or the Muslim Brotherhood. It's just one direct message: down with Mubarak.
The police have been pulled back and the army is there. One could say there's a kind of battle for the hearts and minds of the army underway. Do you think the protesters are winning that battle?
Well, it's very unclear what exactly the military's role is so far. I was in Tahrir Square when the military rolled in on Friday night and the people celebrated their presence. It's been a long time since they've seen the military roll into their streets like this, and the military acted out this kind of stabilizing force, playing a mediating role between the security forces that were still remaining and the protesters. But it is unclear whether this is actually their position. The people on the street, for the most part, seem to think the military is there to support them, unlike the police that's there to suppress them. But if that's actually the case, no one really knows.
There are clearly divisions in the army, particularly between the army in the streets, people you've met, and at the upper echelons. And one could imagine that Omar Suleiman might be planning in one way or another to use the army, deploy the army to sort of squeeze the life out of this mass revolt. Are people talking about that, or are they simply confident that the army will take their side?
The people up until now aren't really talking about an opposition. They have faith in the military. They ask no questions about the military loyalty. They believe that they're there to support them, to protect them. And the opposition is basically not on the scene. When Mohamed El-Baradei showed up last night at Tahrir Square, he basically only talked to journalists and a few people that could hear him. He had no sound system with him, no way really to communicate to the masses, and did not enter Tahrir Square like a popular leader by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay, Karim Bitar, how do you think this might play out now that we've got Mohamed El-Baradei? The opposition is behind him, including the Muslim Brotherhood, as we understand. Do you think that he is the man of the hour, someone who can lead the country towards democracy?
Well, he could very well be a transition figure, but I think we are entering a transitional period that is mostly going to be orchestrated by the military. Now, I am not sure that Mohamed El-Baradei right now is in a position to be at the forefront and lead this revolutionary moment to its fruitful end, unless he has the support of the military. We have to remember that in Egypt, since 1952, the military was always basically ruling the country. 1952, the young officers' coup, after Gamal Abdel Nasser died, Anwar el-Sadat from the army. After Sadat was assassinated, President Mubarak also from the army. So the army is unquestionably the kingmaker. Now, on the other side, it is also unquestionable that al-Baradei has important support. I'm not saying he's hugely popular, but he has important support among Egyptian civil society, internet activists. He did not have any access to the mainstream media, and yet he was able to launch a campaign on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube. He became one of the most popular figures on Facebook with over 300,000 supporters.
Adel, would you like Adel Mahani?
I think the popularity of Baradei is very restricted in Egypt, and many Egyptians think that he's not stayed enough time in Egypt. He's a very appreciated person in the international plane, but I think in Egypt he needs more time to adapt, to know all the problems. It's better to be with the Egyptian in the place to understand what they need exactly. So Baradei is for the moment not ready to be the leader. And I think the Egyptian and the protesters in Egypt, first, they don't need a leader for the moment. They protest. They've arrived in the top of their economic problems and all democracy problems. So they are not alternative for the moment. This is the complication of the situation actually in Egypt. The protesters, they haven't what they will do after. If Mubarak gone or stayed, what the solution, what the alternative?
Okay, Philip Risk, we've got two major developments, the unlimited strike and the mass march, a million people. How is this likely to play out? How effective do you think these two offensives by the opposition will be?
I mean, I don't know if this march will reach a million people, but I do believe that it could be a central moment, a decisive moment in what's going to happen. I do believe that at some point the military is going to shift positions rather than playing this kind of friendly, passive role, stabilizing role that they're playing right now. I do believe that they will try and enforce curfew and start coordinating with the security forces.
Yeah, so push will come to shove finally, and then presumably, I mean, Omar Suleiman might try to find a quiet way to squeeze the life out of this mass movement. Is that what you're suggesting?
I expect that to happen, but having said that, I don't want to underestimate the crowds. The crowds on the street are very, very adamant about their positions, and that's all over Egypt. There's a lot of focus right now in Tahrir Square. A lot of the TV stations that have been broadcasting the news out of Cairo, out of Egypt, have been focusing just on one square in the country. But there is a very similar situation in Alexandria, in Mahalla, in Suez. All over the country, there is a revolt against this regime, and it will not easily be suppressed.
Karim Bitar, do you think that will work if the army sort of lets the people have their protest? They can take Tahrir Square as a stage for a while and then and try to play for time a bit. Do you think that that's what Omar Suleiman will do?
This is probably what he has in mind. Throughout history, there has not been a single revolution that has taken place without that the fate of this revolution is very often decided on the position of the army, whether there is a break in within army rank. What is the disposition of the generals? You know that the United States gives Egypt between $2 and $3 billion every year. $1.3 billion goes directly to the military, so the regime can obtain the support of high-ranking generals. However, within the rank and file of the army, it is an army from the people. Many members will certainly sympathize with the population, so we might very well witness a break within the ranks of the army. But what is absolutely certain is that the United States will not pull the plug until an alternative is clear, until there is another strong man to replace the current strong man. I think Egypt is way too important strategically for the United States, that so that the army will continue to play a very important role with U.S. support.
For those of you who have just joined us here at Radio France International, we are talking about Egypt on this another fateful day in the ongoing People's Revolution. Omar Suleiman, he is really a man of the system. He's over 70. He is the right-hand man of Mubarak, and he's now, it seems, essentially in charge of the country. Mubarak didn't want a vice president. Now he's got one. And the man behind the scenes, do you think that he can find a way to stay in power, or will the people in the streets simply not buy it?
There is urgency now in Egypt, and the question is not who's the man of system or opposite of the system. The question is now how can do to save Egypt. And concerning the military arm, I think it's very sensible questions, because the army is a black box, and we cannot guess its position exactly today, but it shows that for the moment it's very protector, it's nearest to the Egyptian protesters, support them and protect them. So for the change concerning Suleiman or Prime Minister, I think it's urgent in Egypt now to make this transformation in smoothly or gradually transformation.
Okay, so could Omar Suleiman then bring stability and then introduce some kind of transition towards a more democratic society? Are you saying that this man, I mean, he was the intelligence chief and he was the right-hand man for years of Mubarak. Are you saying that you think that he can do this?
Yeah. In the other scenario, other options, in the case of early elections, for example, it's this gradual transformation. So we need strong institutions. We don't like to repeat the same situation in Tunisia to check who will lead the next step after the changing of system.
Okay, Karim, Omar Suleiman, do you envision that he could introduce democratic reforms to Egypt?
No, to put it bluntly, no. I think you were right when you said he was a man of the system. He is perceived by the protesters as a continuation of Hosni Mubarak. He has been in charge of the security apparatus for 20 years. He has had very close contact with his American counterparts, with his Israeli counterparts. So I'm not sure that the protesters in Midan al-Tahrir and in other cities throughout Egypt will support a transition with Omar Suleiman. The protests will not calm down until there is a total change in the state of mind of this regime. The protesters are very adamant, as Philip said. They do not want a continuation of the old regime. They do not want another strong man. So even though Omar Suleiman has a lot of capabilities, he's obviously very effective as a general in charge of intelligence and security, but I'm not sure he can lead Egypt toward democracy.
Okay, we have now the opposition's leader as of Sunday night. Today, of course, is Monday, Mohamed El-Baradei. And then the new vice president, and there wasn't a vice president for many years, Omar Suleiman. The United States has hedged its bets somewhat, and they were remarkably tentative. I mean, this, of course, is the most important ally of Egypt. Who do you think they will support, Adel Mahani? Do you think there's a chance they would support El-Baradei, or do you think they'll support Omar Suleiman behind the scenes, perhaps?
Now, the problem for Europe and the states, they must revise their policy towards the all other of the world. Now, after the Tunisian lessons experience and now in Egypt, I think French President Sarkozy also talked about the very, very deep changing now in the foreign policy for Europe and states. So I think the America, for the moment, the situation very delicate, and they cannot decide immediately it will be for Suleiman or for Baradei.
Okay, Karim, El-Baradei or Omar Suleiman, the old, a close ally of Mubarak's, the United States, are they going to hedge their bets? Are they going to try to play both sides a bit? Or do you think they'll come down in favor of one or the other?
I think they are in favor of a stronger guy, and Suleiman would be the strong guy. They certainly respect El-Baradei. They know that he's quite popular among civil society activists, but they prefer someone who comes from the military system in order to ensure continuity and stability. Egypt has always been the cornerstone of U.S. foreign policy in the region. The United States would not have been able to sustain the two Iraq wars without the help of the Egyptian government. 7.5% of world trade goes through the Suez Canal. All the oil that comes to Europe comes through the Suez Canal. So Egyptian stability is absolutely fundamental for the United States and Israel, and therefore democracy and the freedom is not the priority for them right now. The priority is stability. And I think in their mind, Omar Suleiman, even if he has to use tough methods, is better placed than El-Baradei to do it. Of course, this is not the view of the young protesters, who certainly prefer El-Baradei, who prefer a more open and new figure. But I still have doubts about U.S. position. I think they also have received recently Sami Anan, who is the army chief of staff. They have excellent relations with him. So my bet is that the army will continue to play a very important role in this transition period.
Karim and Adel, we haven't spoken about the Muslim Brotherhood very much. There have been a lot of fears in the West that if things continue along these lines, eventually the Muslim Brotherhood will come to power and you could have an Islamic fundamentalist regime in Egypt, a kind of Hamas in the region's most populous and important country. Are these fears at all justified, Karim?
They are an influential organization. They were founded in 1928 in Egypt. They are quite strong. They are well organized. But everybody in the West should know that this was not an Islamist revolution. I have not seen Islamist slogans for the past 2 weeks. I have seen secular, democratic Egyptians calling for better governments, calling for Mubarak to go. So the Muslim Brotherhood will unquestionably play a role in the coming years. But I do not think that they can seize power and govern alone. They will have to make compromises, and the relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and the regime was not very simple. They were not in permanent opposition or contradiction. The Muslim Brotherhood tried to work with Egyptian society to proselytize, to sell books, etc., and the regime focused on military and security. So there was some sort of Faustian pact between them, and I think the best way to combat these ideologies is through democracy. And there is another very important strand in Egypt, which is the seculars, the feminists. In 1924, an Egyptian woman tore off her veil. She founded one of the most prestigious journals in the country, in all the Arab world. So there is another tradition, and Egyptians know how to deal with these issues. We should stop using this bogeyman and continue supporting dictatorships. This theory that the dictatorships are a bulwark against Islam has proven wrong.
Okay, Adel, are these fears of a future democracy in Egypt dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood, are they justified? Do you envision a kind of Hamas-style democracy in Egypt?
Anyway, the Muslim Brotherhood lost many of their political power last few years, and they actually show themselves far from the protestation. But I think that they try to have a new strategy. It can help them in the case of departure of Mubarak to confirm this position. They know exactly that Europe and the United States can change their support towards Mubarak if they know that the Muslim Brotherhood tried to arrive to the politically.
So you consider this a serious threat?
Yeah.
Finally, we don't have much time left, but I would like your final thoughts about the Arab Revolution, the People's Revolution sweeping across the region, Tunisia, now Egypt. Who is next? Karim?
We are living very exciting times. History has never moved so fast in the Middle East. Two revolutions in less than 2 weeks, two major revolutions. So what I can say is that there is so much excitement around the Arab world. I have never seen this before. So if we just take a minute to reflect on what has happened in the past 10 years, it's absolutely bewildering. It's a lesson in modesty to all foreign policy experts. We all remember these delusional pundits in Washington, D.C., who told us that they were going to bring democracy to the Arab world by bombing Iraq, and what we have seen is the exact opposite. The Iraq war led to an arms race throughout the Middle East. Regimes tightened the screws, repressed their opponents. And suddenly, 7 years later, from the opposite end of the Arab world, from Tunisia, comes this spontaneous revolution, a democratic revolution. It was sort of a divine surprise for the Arab youth. It has awakened a sleeping giant, and today nothing will be as it was before.
Okay, nothing will be as it was before. Do you agree, Adel Mahani? And for other countries as well as Tunisia and Egypt?
I think we take easier the analysis. We cannot go so fast to prospect the new step for other Arab country. It's not systematically what's happened in Tunisia will be possible for Egypt and other countries. I think it's too early to say it will be automatically for Arab world. Yeah.
That's all the time we have for the People's Revolution today on Crossroads. Our thanks to guest Karim Bitar, Adel Mahani, and Philip Risk. And merci Roshi Bagheri, our studio producer. Let us know what you think about what's happening in Egypt. Our email address, crossroads@rfi.fr. And you can listen to us on the internet at rfienglish.com. Tune in again for our next debate with me, Brent Craigston. Until then, goodbye, and I'll be in touch.